Good evening and welcome to Tuesday Topics. I'd like to begin by expressing my appreciation to Rachel and Larry, who are doing our recording this evening. I'd also like to thank Dave Williams for his post-production work. Thanks very much, you see. Anyway, I'd also like to express our appreciation to Talking Communities for making this voice chat program available to us on ACB Radio. Tonight on Tuesday Topics, we're discussing something that ought to be of concern to people who are blind everywhere, that is, careers and employment. And this is certainly a subject about which there's lots that can be said, and it may well be that this is one of those broadcasts that we may end up doing for 2 weeks, because it may be that we will just scratch the surface of some of the issues that are out there. So let's kind of go around and talk a bit about that. And let's start with a newcomer to our group from Arizona, Mr. Jeff Bishop. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Jeff, about the job that you do now, how you got it, and how long you've been doing it.
All right. Thank you, Paul. I appreciate that. My name is Jeff Bishop, and I've been in the technical field mostly as a programmer since May of 1987. Computers have always been something that I've really enjoyed, you know, growing up and everything. And I first started out taking programming classes in high school, and one of the first assignments that I had to work with was coming up with a way that I could use the dumb terminals at school. So we, along with another person, developed a mini-type screen reader, which basically sent the contents of the screen in Morse code on the dumb terminals in our high school. So that was a rather interesting and innovative approach, but it got the job done. I've been working, I started out doing Oracle development, Oracle programming, and then worked for Microsoft, then went to work for Keen Corporation, and then I now am working for the University of Arizona and working on a web-based student information system, which we track 30 to 40,000 students per year with on an administrative basis, and then soon we'll be rolling out the student side of the product. And it's fun, it's challenging, it has its ups and downs in reference to accessibility and things, but I really, really enjoy it, and it keeps me on my toes. It's a great job. The great thing is working for the university, you get time off around the holidays, so that's always good.
Hi, this is Rachel in Orlando, and yeah, Jeff had to remind me about vacation time. Thanks, Jeff. I am currently working as a rehab technician for the Florida Division of Line Services. Basically, that's doing intake and doing some of the responsibilities that a rehab counselor would do. Actually, by trade, though, I am an access technology specialist, and I've worked with access technology instruction. I've also done some seminars and train-the-trainer kind of seminars where I've actually trained some people who would be teaching some of the access technology in conjunction with Microsoft, everything basically. And I actually just kind of fell into both jobs, really. I went to school for an organizational communications degree from the University of Central Florida, graduated with that degree, and really thought I was going to do something in that line of work. And when I found myself out of a job for a brief period of time, volunteered at our local rehabilitation center, and they basically asked me if I was interested in teaching, which is something that I had been interested in doing, but just kind of fell into it quite by accident and just never left.
Cool. Gary, I suspect you're retired now, but maybe you could tell us a little bit about either the jobs you've done or perhaps the jobs that you've tried to do and haven't been able to.
Well, this is Gary Wood from Lansing, Michigan. I graduated from the School for the Blind in 1960, and then I went to the for a few weeks. I went on a 13-week program. They had the sheltered workshops at Michigan Industries for the Blind. They were training me on different things, you know, cutting things off the brooms and different things, working with metal. And then I decided that I'd try going into piano tuning for a while, and I did that my instructor, that was the piano tuning instructor at School of Bind, came over and helped me learn how to do that. And so I learned how to be a piano tuner and did a lot of time practicing. I made some money at that. I went to people's houses. Not a lot, though, because and then I decided to be a dictaphone typist. I didn't feel I was making a lot of money at piano tuning, but I took an adult education classes over to a local high school, and then I did that for a couple of seasons. I did that for the spring term, and then all the way through the next year, 1966, I believe, and then I took I had a job evaluation through the state of whether I could do the kind of work, so I did that, and then when I got through, I took some business courses from the Hadley School of the Blind. I think they suggested that I take those and learn about punctuation and things of that nature, and then I took some business letter writing courses, and then 73, I went to the State Rehabilitation Center for the Blind in Kalamazoo for training and rehab training so that I'd be more employable when I get through, I guess. And then I had a work evaluation through a Goodwill Center they had over there, and I learned mobility and all the different things that they teach at the rehab centers. And then they suggested that I go to a training center in Flint where they teach some business skills or general transcription. I was going to go into medical. I thought about doing that, but I'd been there for a little over a year, and I decided to just stick with the general transcription. I took some civil service tests, and then I became a general transcriptionist. I got jobs through the state of Michigan, through the used to be Services for the Blind, and then after I started working, they became a commission for the blind. I worked there. I was a dictaphone typist for a while, and then when they didn't have that kind of work for me to do, I was a general clerk instead of a clerk typist. I worked in what they call the tape library for the state of social services in the state of Michigan. I run a thing through a machine, and there was some blades that would scrape off excess dirt and iron oxide on the tapes, and I would clean the blades every two times with alcohol and a Q-tip to make sure that I could get all the oxide off the blades. Yeah, I did that for about 12 years. I worked for the state of Michigan, I think 15 and a half. They were going to do away with that kind of work because they were going to cartridges, so I was about to turn 55, so I thought it would be better to take an early retirement if I could, you know. So that's where I'm at from there.
We have another newcomer who's joined us. He actually was on Tuesday Topics when God was a little kid, but he's from Massachusetts, and maybe he could tell us a little bit about the job he does now and how he acquired that job. Welcome, Bob Hache, and say hello to the folks and tell us a little bit about what you do.
Hey, Paul, and sorry to have missed probably about half of what is a very interesting show, and I'm also sorry I haven't been able to be on lately. Just too many demands upon time and such. Right now, I run the Braille program for MAB Community Services, formerly Mass Association for the Blind, here in Massachusetts. We do everything from Braille menus. We do a few bank statements. We do a lot of meeting agendas. We also do a lot of user guides for consumer electronic goods. I have a crew of volunteers that works under me. I am the only paid staff. You know, I think one of the reasons that I got this job is because of some of the advocacy that I've been doing and, you know, the basic networking thing. I have not always had a job like this. I've only had this, it's almost going to be 4 years in May. And before that, I was your typical overeducated, underemployed, a blind person. Some of which was my fault, but I think some of which was a product of what happened when I was younger. I went to Perkins through seventh grade and then left there, went to public school, and I can remember in high school thinking, gee, I'd like to get a summer job, and my itinerant teachers would say, well, you know, maybe you'd be better off just taking it easy during the summer. You know, everything will be okay, and you can go to college and this and that. And I wish that I were given a swift kick in the butt when I was a kid and told to get out and get yourself a summer job and maybe help to get out and do that. That may be more feasible now in the days of computers than it was back when I was a kid, but I mean, I'm sure that there must be a way that I could have done things like bag groceries and things like that, and the types of jobs that my other peers, you know, in high school were doing. So that would be my biggest piece of advice, you know, for young people, is to just get out and start way before you think you need to, and so that you have something to put on a resume when you're starting out. My work experience on my early resumes was very, very minimal.
Thanks very much, Bob. I think you've actually raised some interesting points. in a Department of Education study that came out in the early 1990s, it said that 95% of all disabled kids who graduated from high school had never held a job. And so, you know, I think your experience was pretty typical of other students with disabilities, but it may well have a good deal to do with why such a large proportion of those folks are in fact unemployed. Larry, tell us a little bit about your work history, if you would.
I'm Larry Turnbull, and I got into computers out mid-80s when I was still in school. Started just like Jeff. I took some programming courses during my junior and senior years. First program, and that was when the IBM XTs and ATs were out, and the first one that those I used had a Vert Plus synthesizer. And programming courses I took was Pascal, and I wrote quite a few programs with that. In fact, one of them was a grade tabulation system that St. Augustine Technical Center used for quite a while. And then after that, I went on through and became the first blind graduate of DeVry Institute of Technology of Atlanta, Georgia, and came out of there with a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Information Systems, and then moved on up to Michigan to get a job at the insurance company. Worked there for about 5 years, and then the layoffs came as I was the victim of downsizing, as many other people, and that's something that is not prejudice at all. It gets everybody. And then came back to Orlando, to Florida anyway, settled in Orlando, and now I work at a company called Hewitt Associates, where I do a lot of mainframe programming with JCL and SAS and all that fun programming stuff for the different client teams, that whichever ones need work. And that's pretty much the short version. There's a lot of detail that went into that. I worked pretty hard. DeVry is not an easy school to get through. They pride themselves on only, you know, putting through the best students they possibly can. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell, and I really enjoy my work.
I wonder if maybe downsizing doesn't hurt the Vine population more than it does than the public in general, the sighted population.
Well, the thing with that is when I was let go from my job, I was one of about 45 programmers let go. There were, you know, quite a few others along with me.
It's really hard to say. There are some blind people who end up getting kept on when entities downsize, because people don't want the press of letting poor disabled people go. And I think there are other times when blind people get let go when downsizing happens, because it's a good excuse to get rid of a blind person who may be a bad worker. And there are other times, and I'm absolutely sure this is the situation with Larry, where blind people are treated exactly like everybody else and get let go because downsizing is happening.
Interestingly enough, Larry and I got let go the same day from our jobs. But I would say that it only hurts blind people in so much that it is difficult for blind people to get jobs after something like that. And I'm probably jumping into something that will be covered later on, but I don't believe that it's any other reason than that it would be more difficult, more difficult for a blind person being downsized. And I don't see that in either of the times that I was downsized that it was an issue of because I was blind. It just happened that I was in the right place at the wrong time, or wrong place at the wrong time, or whatever you want to call it.
In the interests of fairness, let me really quickly go through my work history. A little bit different than some folks, because from the time I was 7, I lived outside of the U.S. From the time I was 7 till I was 13, I lived in Canada. And then from the time that I was 13 until I was 21, I lived in Jamaica, and then went to Trinidad to do a graduate degree. And after I did that graduate degree in international relations, I ended up getting married, actually during the year, and therefore getting a job was sort of important. And I ended up starting to teach high school in Trinidad and did that for 10 years in the long run. Then moved back to the States, became a rehab teacher with the Division of Blind Services, and then became a a rehabilitation counselor, and then ran a private agency for the blind in Jacksonville, and have been doing the job I do now since 1986. And that job is the directing of services for students with disabilities at Miami-Dade College's North Campus. We're the largest community college in the country now. So that's a little bit about my work history. We've had another person join us who I suspect will have some interesting perspectives on work history. So why don't we invite him to tell us a little bit about his experience coming through the ranks and his experience in terms of work. And welcome for the first time to Tuesday Topics to Mike Calvo. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well, sir.
Well, I did start down in your area in Miami, and I am a product, I guess, of the Division of Blind Services, which provided me with excellent training. I grew up in the music industry, and I kind of started out in the job world as an entrepreneur. I opened up my first company, spinning records, and being a mobile DJ when I was 13, and really enjoyed running my own show. Got involved in music and production of music when I was around 17, and opened up a recording studio and decided I was going to be a musician and a producer. So did that for a few years, got married at 21 and had to cut my hair and get serious about life because I had a kid coming. And so I went to go get a job at a bank. Of course, I went to my local Division of Blind Services and said, I need a job. And they said, well, what kind of training do you have? And unfortunately, I didn't have very much. I had dropped out of high school due to a great deal of politics and frustration with the Dade County school system, which I won't go into here. But so they helped me go to the bank and got my training at the Lighthouse, and then went to the bank working as a collector and doing collections and customer service, and started working there and really realized that there was no career path set for me. They brought me in as an entry-level collector at $13,500 a year in 1989. That was less than I had made in my entire life. I mean, from the time I was 13 years old, I was making, over $25,000, $30,000 a year. And the year before I was making $13,500, I had done about $85,000 doing music. Problem was, of course, there was a lot of extracurricular activities that go into doing music and that kind of thing, plus staying awake for many, many days and many hours. So couldn't do that anymore. And basically went to go work at the bank and went in one day with my entrepreneurial spirit to my supervisor and said, so when am I going to be the president of this joint? It was I was doing good and making my numbers. At that time, we had a blind productivity rate of 24 calls an hour and a normal employee productivity rate of about 32 calls an hour. I kid you not. At that point, this is pre-ADA. I think that anybody here that is of HR would cringe hearing something like that. Basically, I went to the bank, started working. They didn't know what to do with me, and I called my mentor at the time, a guy named Greg Luther, who works for the Division of Blind Services, who had a lot to do with setting up my system. He said, Greg, I can't believe what these people have told me. They basically told me if I'm a real good puppy, they're going to give me a 5% raise for the rest of my life, and 20 years down the road, I'm going to be stuck in the same job. And of course, I'm 21 years old, so I'm freaking out, and I'm almost in tears. Oh my gosh, what am I going to do? I can't believe I've done this to myself, and blah blah blah. And Greg said, listen, you need to calm down and understand that what you need to do is you need to understand that computer. You need to get behind it and learn it. And behind that computer, you are an equal, if not superior, to people. So you don't just need to learn it. You don't need to become friends with it. You need to become intimate with it. So there I went, the passionate 21-year-old, going to eat the world up for breakfast, packing my IBM PS2 model 3286 home on my back every day, my 14-inch monitor and all, started studying. And through great people like Recorded Books for the Blind, they started reading me a lot of manuals on on internet, on mainframe connectivity. There was no internet at that time, but at least that I knew of. Mainframe connectivity, and kind of found that I had a knack for computers, learned how to program, and wrote my first program that would auto-dial people and brought the blind productivity up to 42 calls an hour. Figured if I was going to be a freak and basically separated because I was blind, it was going to be because we did things the right way. And got Employee of the Month, so they liked that so much. Because of the automation and all of that, that they hired another blind guy. They brought in a guy who, Paul, you probably know, Jesus Garcia, and who's an excellent, wonderful person involved in the ACB and just has been involved in political stuff for the blindness community since I can remember. And I helped Jesus learn at the bank. And then Jesus and I were doing so good that they brought another blind guy in, and I trained him, and Jesus trained him for a while. And then one day they called me up and asked me if I could go do some work at Ryder Trucks to train blind people and to demo for a blind guy that was going to go work there. And I did. And that's kind of how I got back into the whole business of, you know, I realized Greg told me there wasn't enough people in the state to really do computers. Now, of course, it's a little different. But at the time, there was a big gap, and went to go work for the state of Florida as a contractor doing putting blind people to work and once and for all creating progressive paths of employment. And it ended up placing about 400 blind people between Florida, Alabama, Tennessee, working in the Fed in several different places, and just kind of ended my working for anyone else at that point, and went on forward to eventually do what I'm doing now.
We have such an interesting cross-section of folks, and there are so many, at least for me, interesting questions that are out there. All of us involved on this program this evening are pretty good computer users, and all of us. Well, actually, let's do something real fast. I'm a Braille reader. Let's go around the group and see how many would classify themselves as good Braille readers.
This is Rachel. I can't live without Braille.
I think I'm a pretty good Braille reader.
I love Braille.
Viva la Braille. Although I don't use it as much as I should, but I do love it.
I have a PK that I enjoy using for meeting notes and stuff like that, and I use the Braille display quite often.
And that's interesting. One of the statistics that's out there says that people who are blind and are good Braille readers are much more likely to find a job and keep a job than those people who are not good Braille readers. So from our experience, what would we say to young blind folks who are looking at beginning to choose careers? What kind of advice would each of us offer to those folks?
Well, Paul, I think it falls into two or three categories. When I go out and I speak to groups of kids, and I do it not a lot, but, you know, at least once or twice a year. And the thing that I tell them is, one, education is by far the most important thing they can do, and become a very literate reader and communicator. Secondly, communication, and it not just writing, but also communicating effectively in public speaking. So what I suggest to people is to join Toastmasters or an equivalent organization so that you can work on things like communication and, you know, oral skills, things like that. It's very, very important, especially with body language. I found that when I was in Toastmasters that I was actually a very effective and good speaker, but my expression as far as body language and things like that was horrible. And so it was really interesting, you know, to actually have someone assist me with that. And boy, that could be a topic all unto itself. And third is just, making sure to really focus on really what makes you happy as an individual. And I think focusing on education, communication, and striving to set goals for things that make you happy will take you a long way.
When I went and got my MBA, which was right around my late 20s, early 30s or so, I took a course on speaking then, and I had taken previous courses in speaking in high school as well as at the undergraduate level. But in this case, they videotaped our speeches, and then we went back with the professor one-on-one to observe the speech. And the first thing she said to me was, Bob, I don't know how to tell you this. You know, I know you're doing a good presentation in many ways, and, you know, it sounds effective, but if you could only see your face, you look almost like Mr. Spock. And that taught me to really start to work on you know, facial expressions, you know, trying to make eye contact with people in the room, which, by the way, if you're using Braille notes, you actually have a better opportunity to do it than someone who is sighted and is using printed notes. But I'd say my biggest piece of advice for young people is get out there and do some kind of work when you're young, when you're in high school, maybe before high school if you get the opportunity to, even if it's a job that you don't like, so that you've got something to put down on a resume and you've got someone that you can list as a reference that you were employed with that you got a paycheck from. And the other thing is network like crazy. There's never enough networking can be done.
Mike Calvo, I actually come from a little bit of a different mindset, I guess, about a couple of things. Bob and Jeff, I think you're absolutely right. I think that eye contact and body language and a lot of these things are so essential. And a lot of us have been blessed to have friends, at least myself, who say, hey, dude, stop that. You look like a freak when you have your face like that, or you can't move like that, or people can see you when you do that, or what have you, as you're growing up. And while it does create some rather embarrassing moments for us as we're growing up, it really does mold us into more mainstream and marketable type people. I get very frustrated when I hear folks in this community say that there's such a high unemployment rate, there's so much unemployment. And my thing is, folks, let's get out and create more blind-owned businesses. You know, the biggest thing, there was no internet when I was a kid. And when I got online, I just met a group of people that just amazed me, not the least of which is the esteemed Mr. Edwards over here, whom I had great opportunities to speak to later at ACB conferences and stuff, and just really, really got to understand, and it really was very therapeutic for me, actually, to understand that I wasn't alone. So it's important to encourage blind people to know other blind people, and to, yes, we need to, quote-unquote, fit in, and we need to, quote-unquote, to a certain degree, be normal, as we were continuously told as we grow up, but also identify with your group and identify with us and understand that we are a strong group of people and we do have an opinion and we are a market and we are capable of doing these things.
One of the interesting things that always got me through was that I was always thinking that I needed to be better than the next person. That's maybe not the best way to say it, but for any other person competing for the same jobs as me, sighted or whatever, for their 100%, I felt like I needed to give 150%. And going in with that mindset, you tend to just, you know, shoot for the sky and really try to do your best. So I would say to somebody that to get out there, don't let somebody tell you that you can't do something. If you really want to do it bad enough, then go out there and find a way to do it. Be creative. Come up with methods for adapting whatever it is you need to adapt. And go and prove to people that, yeah, this is something that I can do. This is something that I want to do. And when you're competing for that job, go out there and give your 150% and just blow them away and let them have no reason to be concerned that they're hiring a blind person.
It's great to have your dreams and, you know, what you really want to do in life, but be a little realistic too and just try to figure out if there really is, you know, a demand or a market or, you know, something that you can get yourself into, you know, a lot of opportunities with. And also, when you're applying for those jobs out there, even with just sending resumes, drive them nuts, sort of, so to speak. After I got laid off up in Michigan and I came back down here, you know, I went 6 months looking for a job and it was, you know, it was starting to get frustrating, but I kept at it and I kept just going on the internet and sending those resumes, you know, several times a day to the same position, you know, just so they kept getting it and getting it. There were positions there I knew I could do without a shadow of a doubt, and I just kept slamming my resume into their website.
The right education is important, you know, learning, being literate and learning to know Braille probably would be important. I took public speaking courses at a local high school back when I graduated. I think I graduated in 60 and 61, I took a course of public speaking. I think I probably did use some Braille notes for that. And I think that probably the computer age is going to be good for blind people today. It'd be a great thing. But I think that we're going to come to a place where it'll be important for anybody to have skills, you know, to know about computers and things of that nature. I think that people are going to need to have a skill in order to make it.
We've heard a lot of good advice from us, but I'm going to, at least to a degree, play the devil's advocate here. And I'd like us to go around and focus on a question that I think is out there, and it may be unspoken. It may be something that we haven't talked about very much. But the fact is, it seems to me, that there are a lot of people coming out of high school now, and even coming out of college and university, who don't have the same mindset as all of us in this group seem to have. And maybe we can go around and speculate a little bit about why that is, but it's certainly been my experience working in a college environment that a lot of the folks who are coming to my institution, A, haven't worked, B, don't know very much about computers, C, couldn't care less, and D, want someone to do everything for them. And I don't think that what I'm seeing is atypical of what's happening with a lot of blind people who are coming out of school right now. And maybe we could speculate a little bit about, first, is that true? And second, if it is, why? And third, if it is, what can we do about it?
I think you are correct, Paul. I think one of the things that I noticed here is that all of us, and I who was thinking about this after I had made my last statement, all of us here seem pretty confident in our skills, and we exhibit that confidence through our jobs and through our belief in ourselves. And I think when kids come out of high school and college, they don't have that job experience behind them so much to be able to draw from that experience to say, you know what, I can do this. And you know, each job that we have and each time we do something in our jobs that maybe we have to modify or work around situations, that's just adding one more thing to our job experience that we can draw from. And I think that kids that are coming out of high school and college just don't have that experience yet to be able to have that confidence. And it's really difficult to gain that confidence from people who haven't been there. That's why I think certainly people who are coming to you certainly have a great role model to deal with. But also, I think another good program for people, for kids to look at is, I believe it's from AFB, and what comes on the top of my head is Career Connect, but I think it's also tied in with that as a mentoring program, and I think that's certainly something that people can take advantage of and maybe allow them to be able to see some of what we're all showing here tonight that maybe they would not have had that experience with.
People coming out of college, of course, it's harder for blind people, you know, because that unspoken prejudice is still there, unfortunately. But a lot of jobs, they want experience right off the bat. Where are you going to get it when you're just coming out of school? I mean, it's the hardest thing is getting that first job. And my supervisor of my previous job, he stated that, you know, he said, when once you get the first job, it's, you know, easier after that. Not totally easy, but easier. The first one is always hard to get. And you have to, I guess most of these people coming out of school are going to have to try to force themselves into the mindset that they can do these skills and hopefully get into a college that would work with them and show them that they can do that. Like with me, I went to DeVry and I had a couple of professors there that really found this an interesting concept, you know, a blind person that they never worked with before. You know, some of them, of course, there's the typical ones that wanted to blow it all aside, but there's a couple of them that really wanted to see this work, and they went out of their way to help me out, and that gave me a lot of confidence, and, you know, it gave them a lot of confidence too in their teaching experiences as well. And when I finally walked across that stage, it was one of the best moments I ever could imagine.
Kids are coming out of school, high school mainly, and somewhat college, that really don't know how to do a lot of things for themselves. I've heard some of these guys that are in college don't know how to order books from RFB&D. I mean, when I was in high school, my itinerant teachers had me order my own books for my senior year in high school so I'd get some practice at it. I must say, I am disturbed to think that it may be possible that these folks don't know that much about computers, because if you're a young person today and you don't know that much about computers, computers. I'm sorry to say this, but for the vast majority of jobs out there, you're sunk. I mean, a computer is the way of the end of the 20th century, and even more so the beginning of the 21st century here. And, you know, I think part of the problem is you had too many of these aides going around with the kids in school, you know, doing this and that for them. Instead of teaching the kids mobility, you have an aide taking the kid from classroom to classroom. Well, that sure as heck isn't the way I did it. It probably isn't the way any of you who went public school did it either, nor at residential schools. I think, unfortunately, one of the negatives of mainstreaming is this, because there is this attitude maybe that blind persons, you know, can't do certain things, that they haven't been, you know, asked or forced to try. I remember part of what I did going to Perkins, you know, you get babied by your mommy when you're a blind kid, and part of what they did was, you know, make you do things you didn't want to do, like stick your head under the water or find your way across campus, you know, in a rainstorm, things of that nature. And I think maybe not enough of that's happening with some of today's young people.
I find that some of those comments extremely interesting, because what the common thread I really think that's going through here is so much mentoring that needs to take place. I mean, there's such need for blind children to have a big brother or big sister that is blind, that's been there and done that. I mean, as a parent, I don't know how many people here are parents, but as a parent of four, you know, I'll tell you, being blind myself and having gone through, I would be terribly challenged, I think, if one of my kids was blind, and I've been there and done that. So I at the same time as I understand what everybody's saying, I also believe that the community as a whole has a responsibility to help those kids come up and to really give them firm, you know, tough love, and give the parents tough love and say, listen, this is what's going on, and the programs be put together for mentoring in communities.
I went to the Florida School for the Blind, and that was one of the best things that ever happened to me, to help me grow up and learn that the world is not going to give you anything at all. It doesn't owe you a thing. And if you want to be successful, you've got to get up and do it on your own. You can't wait for someone to take you by the hand and take you through the world. It just doesn't work that way. And unfortunately, a lot of the blind schools now have closed, and they're putting the kids into mainstreaming, and, you know, they have aides walking around with them and that sort of thing. And that's pretty sad. I wish the schools like that were still around to teach these kids their independence. I think that's the root of it all.
I think one of the things we need to be talking about here too is not only mentoring the blind individuals, but also educating those individuals who are family members of the blind people, and also the people who would assist the blind people, because for lack of a better word, they're just as much at fault. I mean, both parties are at fault. Of course, if the people who are assisting the blind person is willing to do everything for that person, who wouldn't maybe be, you know, want possibly take advantage of that, you know, if that's all the kid ever knows. So not only do we need to mentor the blind people, but we also need to educate the people who are in those people's lives and say, hey, look, this is what this individual is capable of. And let's try to show them how to do it, and maybe if you could not be supportive by doing for that person, but be supportive in assisting that person should they ask for help, or assist that person in things that they really do have difficulty with.
I think that we've actually raised a number of really intriguing points. The one comment I'd make to what Rachel said in her last go-round is we're fighting in a strange kind of environment now, because so many parents have taken some of the philosophies of mainstream to heart, and they're essentially saying that they want their child to associate as little as possible with people who are blind, and they're actively placing barriers in the way of students doing that. And I think that many school systems, while they will recognize entities like AFB, and while they'll recognize other outfits who are service delivery agents, they for the most part have not yet recognized the value in working with consumer organizations. And perhaps one one of the things that we really need to do as ACB is to go out into school systems and, if we need to, really demand that blind kids have an opportunity to interact with mentors who are blind. Because if they can't, they're going to leave school with an entirely skewed notion of what a blind person can and can't do that's not based on reality, but that instead is based on received knowledge from people who really don't know. And I guess the other thing that I would say, though, is there isn't as much need, and maybe we can talk a bit about this and see if people may disagree with me, but there isn't as much need now for young people who are blind to have anything to do with other blind people. One of the things that the internet and Bookshare and taped books and a range of other things have done is to lessen the need that young blind people may have to connect with other blind folks, because they have access to information. Many would argue that the ADA has actually opened some doors and a capable blind person is going to find a job. So the bottom line in terms of what I'm saying is it's more difficult for us as a consumer organization to try to persuade people who are young and who are coming out of school with an extremely negative attitude towards other blind people that there really is something to be gained by getting involved with us.
Maybe the parents have trouble accepting their kids' blindness as a whole.
I do think that even though the involvement of you know, blind people with other blind people can be reduced somewhat, I think it's in many circumstances is invaluable and should be encouraged in some respect.
Absolutely, I think it's invaluable. I think just one of the situations, you know, you have a blind kid who's mainstreamed into the public school. This happened to me all the time. You know, just social issues like, you know, what happens if you're the last person picked on the kickball team? You know, how does that make you feel? Well, nobody but another blind person is going to know how that makes you feel because all the sighted kids get picked. So just, you know, it sounds like little trivial things like that, but to a kid, to a blind kid, I mean, that's major because, you know, that translates into, well, I don't have any friends and nobody understands and I'm the only one. So there's so many issues there that even if you put a kid into a mainstream situation and they may interact with people, those are the kind of things that only a blind person is going to understand.
And that brings me right back to my point with, you know, the schools for the blind is they could socialize. That was the main key, you know, besides the independence is the social factor, because a lot of kids, you know, when school's over, they go home and what do? I mean, not many sighted kids are going to ask a blind kid to come play with them in the neighborhood. I mean, that just doesn't happen even today.
I kind of have to disagree with that. I use this example often when I speak. I grew up in Miami, Florida, and being of Cuban descent, my parents came in the 1960s to the United States, and I saw group after group come onto Miami shores and basically come up in society. Very few of those groups, if any, did it for the, you know, were integrated for the sake of accommodation. They were integrated because the rest of society learned their culture and understood them as a viable part of the mainstream community. And it wasn't done by sending them to a school for the Cuban or a school for the Haitian or a school for the Colombian or for the Nicaraguan. It was done by the leaders of that community that were already here, helping create and be a bridge between that community and introducing and helping with legislation and things of that nature, which I think is, you know, is what ACB and NFB attempt to do in many ways. But there's not enough happening at the community level sometimes. A lot happens on the national and the Fed level, and you know, and you have a finite amount of it happening on the community level to the best of the ability of the very dedicated people that are in the local chapters, but there certainly is not enough community involvement from those of us, and I include myself, that have been there, done that, getting out there and doing more of this community outreach to both sides and acting as that bridge.
we're getting more and more to the place where mainstreaming is becoming bad since total inclusion came along, since mainstreaming came along. One of the things that we probably neglect to note is that at the time when mainstreaming was introduced as an idea, when the Education of All Handicapped Children's Act was passed in the 1970s, 75% of blind people were already mainstreamed. And what that means is that for an awful lot of them, they were successful. There are other factors, I think, that have operated to lessen the success of blind folks. I know that I probably speak for every single person here who would say that if we had the opportunity to go to school or college now as compared to what it was like when we went to school or college, we would have found it infinitely easier to do well because of the degree to which the technology actually does make it possible for us to compete. And the only thing I'd add to that is if we can get to it, because one of the things that I found in this school system is the technology's there, the infrastructure's there, but it never finds its way to the kid in the classroom, or very seldom does. So other kids are becoming competent in computers, and blind kids for the most part are not. So it's a conundrum. Let's go around for final thoughts for this evening, and then we'll close tonight down with the expectation that all of you guys will turn up next week so that we can continue this very lively discussion on employment and careers.
Mainstreaming, probably when the promise of it came out, I think a lot of people felt it was a good idea, but then I think that the problem seems to be is because of the kids maybe falling through the cracks because they don't get the Braille, if that's the way it is. But technology should make it easier for them, I suppose. But if you're one kid one blind kid in a group of sighted kids, and then you find out that he can't do certain things because he's blind, and that maybe, I don't know, he probably feels bad or whatever, unless he just accepts it. But of course now, back when I was at School of Blind, I was in the band, and I don't know that that's the opportunity they get in the public school these days. But we got into sports. Some of them got into the wrestling team over to the School of Blind, and then they even had a football team for a while. But then they quit that and went for wrestling. But it's about the opportunities that kids can have today is what the key is.
I think you really hit upon something here when you talk about opportunities. And just for me, what mainstreaming has been like for me, I guess it's not a unique situation, but it is a little different in that I went from kindergarten through seventh grade at a residential school, being Perkins, and then eighth through 12th grade in a public school. On the positive side, I think that mainstreaming did help me in a certain way from an academic perspective. I was prepared by my seventh grade teachers at Perkins that, Bob, you better be prepared for more homework when you begin eighth grade next year. And they actually encouraged me to advance myself in mathematics ahead of the rest of the class and take the books at home on the weekend. And I did do some of that, and it's probably a good thing that I did. But from a social perspective, it was very difficult going from being one sort of average Joe blind kid to being, you know, the only blind kid in the school. And, you know, I can remember a lot of Saturday nights being spent with history books and other various non-social kinds of things. I think that one of the things that we need to do is get it so that blindness services, whether it is the state agencies or whether it is the Departments of Education, and certainly I think us consumer groups, all the consumer groups, need to be participating more in this, and that is getting the experience to the young people, show them what it is that they're going to need to succeed. They're going to need to do things for themselves. They're going to need to start looking for work, you know, maybe before they want to, and networking and all of the whole rest of it. And also, I would say that we need to encourage kids in public school to get into some of these extracurricular activities. One of the things that made life better for me is that I joined the high school wrestling team, and I wasn't very good at it, but I had a lot of fun with it and did get to make some friends that way. And I think that was very important for my overall self-esteem.
I don't totally down mainstreaming at all. I mean, I did it as well from ninth grade on. I spent half the day at St. Augustine High, which is the regular public high school, and then, you know, Florida School for the Blind. I think the two went very well hand in hand, and most of the blind students coming out of there, or if they put their minds to it, are very capable of handling both of that. I had a lot of homework in those days, as Rachel did as well, I'm sure. We spent many nights studying and trying to cram for different exams or what have you. And I think the two go very well. And I think ACB would probably do well to maybe get more involved in the mainstream program to oversee, you know, how things are handled, not just on technology, but just on how the blind students are taught. You know, don't hand them everything on the silver platter. Make them work for it.
Employability for the blind is not just something to be looked at by the people who are needing to be employed and at the time they need to be employed, but it's a whole a product of the life experience of the whole of the person. You know, all my life experiences, I was very fortunate to have a very supportive family when I was a kid. I was mainstreamed in the public school when I was a kid. I also went to blind school. I also did both at the same time, where I went to blind school for some things and was mainstreamed for others. So I had a, and I also had mentors. So I had a very well-rounded experience as I was growing up, and which allowed me to be more prepared and more confident and ready to go take on the world. And I think that when we're looking at employability for people who are blind, we need to look at all of these issues and try to give our blind students the best education they can have and allow them for the most opportunities they can have to be successful. So I'm definitely looking forward to talking further on this next week.
I also was mainstreamed as well and went kind of half and half, and I think the experience was invaluable for me, and I think the importance of extracurricular type activities is very important. For example, I was involved with Model United Nations and mock trial for a number of years in high school, and in fact, we took second and almost made it to the national mock trial competition, which would have been rather interesting, but so, yeah, I think it's really important, especially to get out there and pick up a lot of those social skills. And I think the other thing that's important is and that's making a significant difference is that technology is now, you know, dramatically different. You know, when I was in high school, we didn't have Braille displays, or at least they were just coming out at the time. In fact, I had gotten my first Braille display when I started working in 87. You know, they really were not really that readily available, and those that were extremely expensive. I think the first Braille Classic, I don't know if many of you have seen that before, but so I think the use of technology is definitely increasing the ability of a blind student to be able to be more effective in a mainstreamed environment. You know, the amount of resources that are available that way are is just phenomenal. So that's even making it even more doable, more so to the point where you probably could, you know, go ahead and go to, you know, be mainstreamed full time and not need to attend a blind school. But I think if you were to attend a school like, you know, or attend a regular public school, I think some involvement with other blind, you know, students is definitely beneficial for all of them, and I think it should be greatly encouraged.
I guess I exit on the same way I came in. Entrepreneurship, let's not forget the community value, the community aspects that we need to build our own community and hire our own people and assist our people in understanding that we can be business leaders, we can be business owners, and there are actually a great deal of minority programs that the government has in place that encourage minority-owned businesses. And I think that that is also just as important and viable to touch upon when you look at, you know, the future of our community and job-related things, that we have to go out there, and not everybody can be a leader, meaning not everybody can be the boss, but a community consists of bosses and employees, and there's employers and employees. And there's no reason that both of those parts couldn't be from the same community and help build the community into a stronger community that then gets mainstreamed and integrated into mainstream society for the sake of commerce, which is, I think, where the rubber really meets the road, is are we an active participant in commerce and in consumer affairs and things of that nature?
This is Bob Hache. Paul, I was really taken aback when you said that along with other things, that today's young people can't do. You mentioned computers, and one of the reasons why that just sort of really blew me away is my wife is a nursery school teacher, and my God, her four-year-olds are using computers, and maybe they know more than she does about them, but that's a whole other story. I mean, kids are learning computers at young ages. My nephew is a five-year-old in kindergarten, and he's using them. Aren't blind kids getting the experience with the computer? And if they're not, who's falling down on the job here? Is it departments of education? Is it blindness schools? Or are they being taught computers when they go to schools like that?
Bob, I think the answer to your question is it varies some. I think kids who go to schools for the blind are much more apt to come out of school with a good knowledge of computers and with an understanding of access technology. Nevertheless, I think that tonight has really been an exciting program, and I think we've put a lot of ideas on the table for people to think about. I'd like to thank everyone for participating this evening in Tuesday Topics. Again, I'd like to express my appreciation to Rachel Bader and Larry Turnbull for recording this evening's program, to Dave Williams for editing for later broadcast, and to George Vise and Talking Communities for making this software available to us at ACB Radio. I hope everyone will tune in next week when we will continue our discussion of employment and careers. And we're going to focus next week on what some of the resources that are out there on the Internet that people can use to find out more about careers and to find out more about what options are out there and what kinds of mentoring programs may actually be available at the moment. And what are some of the innovative programs that organizations of and for the blind have tried and that agencies for the blind have tried that are making a difference in terms of making employment possible for people who are blind? Hope you'll join us next week for Tuesday Topics, and until then, good night. On Tuesday Topics next week, we're going to continue our discussion of employment and careers for people who are blind. During our show this week, we had an opportunity to talk a lot about some of the strengths and weaknesses that blind people bring to the job market and some of the things that the external community have done to impact employment of people who are blind. Next week, we'll talk about some of the resources that are out there to help blind people to find appropriate jobs and to look at various career options. I hope you'll join us next week on Tuesday Topics when we continue the exploration of careers for people who are blind. Please join us.